Hey, everybody, it's me, Frank Fontana, and this is the time of the show where you typically would hear music or Ross singing. Are you singing, Ross? No, he's not. No, he's got to get him potted up, too. Well, folks, happy Sunday to you. I hope you're enjoying some of this beautiful gift of a weather. There's the song! Yes! Enjoy that for a moment, would you? Hi, everybody, it's me, Frank Fontana. Thanks for joining us for the Frank Fontana Show. Feels much better. You just got to get that out. You know, a little bit of music helps. Are you alive there, Ross? He still isn't potted up. Where is this guy? Yeah, well, anyway, you know Ross Cochran, everybody, the producer for our show. We do have a fun show today. We'll be exploring the new colors that just got released for Pantone. If you don't know what Pantone is, it's the company who pretty much rules the color world. Once a year, they get to, put their mark out there and say, this is what everyone should be using in terms of colors. And this is like across the board, from paint to fashion, home interior. Everyone kind of jumps on this color and tries to make it a part of the trend. Now, I posted something, a link to this on my Instagram, or a picture of it, and that way you can go see it and make a judgment and then chime in on our show here, because we're going to be exploring this in Dirty Little Secrets and ways on how to use it in your home. Now, last year, I believe it was something like oxblood, which was like this Merlot-ish color, and it certainly was a tough color to use. This color palette, which I'm not going to reveal just yet, you have to tune in for the whole show for that. Is definitely more applicable. I could see it used in so many different ways. And we're going to be talking to some design experts today on the show to kind of vet it out a little bit and see what they think. We're talking to designer who's going to be expanding our conversation from last week on the design trends for the year. Author Robin Wilson from the book Clean Design, Wellness for Your Lifestyle, says there are 10 hot design trends for 2016 that we should all know about. So we're going to be talking to Robin about those, and her and I will kind of do a little coffee talk over the topic. Should be fun. Ross, are we back up and running? I'm not sure why I'm not hearing you, but there should probably be a button here that needs to be pressed and isn't pressed. You can just come out here if you want and hang out. That would be cool. No? You busy today? By the way, Ross is going to have a baby any second, so he's a little, you know, a little distracted. I'm going to forgive him. I do forgive you, Ross.
Thanks, Frank.
Yeah, you hear him in the background. And we're training some new folks. A lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. If you want to see all this madness, you can hop on WGNradio.com/watch. And we have a live stream that goes out, and I'm waving to you guys right now if you're watching online. You can always listen online if you're on the go and you want to just listen from your phone. You can download the app, which is pretty nice. I like the WGN Radio app, and you can just click Listen Live, and you can hear the show anytime, and for that matter, any other show. Speaking of which, Miracle on 34th Street is coming up. That is going to be happening, well, our version of it, December 18th from 10 a.m. to noon. The whole cast and crew of the WGN Radio Network will be participating in this. Everyone from Lou Manfredini to Steve Cochran, Orion Samuelson will be on, and they'll all have specific characters they'll be playing, as well as, I believe, I will be involved at some level. Is that true, Ross? Have you confirmed that rumor yet?
I will do my best.
Yeah, maybe we should turn you on here. How about that?
Let's try that.
There we go. Hey. You can do the whole show here.
I'll do the
show
right here and just cue Shante.
That'd be great. You having technical difficulties?
We're having some technical difficulties, but we'll get them straightened out.
Yeah, by the end of the show.
But yeah, I mean, you know, by Hamp will be in, cause we'll have it all figured out.
And hope the Bears win.
Yeah, now we're getting to the place where, you know, they went out. We could actually have the Bears on for a while. It
right.
Looked pretty bleak for several weeks.
No, they're surprising me. I was a naysayer. I was negative in the beginning, but now I'm starting to kind of slowly come around. They're proving themselves.
They are.
I heard a little something about, this is completely off topic here, but Kristen Cavallari's brother got kidnapped or something, or is missing?
Yeah, they're...
Is this to be, for real?
It seems that way. I think it was... I don't know if the brother and Kristen talked all that often, or seemed kind of an estranged family member situation.
Mm. But, so it's nothing to do with a potential 49ers fan trying to distract Cutler.
Nothing got direct.
No story like that.
No.
And we should inflame that type of behavior. Anyway, hey, we got this Wonder Woman coming on the show today, and she's part of our new segment series called Wonder Women of Illinois. And her name is Mickey Williams. She is a motivational speaker, life coach, all-around ball of energy. And anybody who puts on their website as their tagline, slip them a Mickey,
yeah,
I'm a fan of.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And I don't mean that in the most negative way of that, but she uses her name in a very creative way.
Yes.
And with her version of slipping people a Mickey is a burst of light, joy, and energy.
She, as her website says, she's not just a speaker. She's an event.
She is. A one-woman event. And she's going to be live in our studio. I got chills. I think there's going to be like a fireworks show coming in with her or something.
Pretty much.
Or she's her own little fireworks show. So we'll see. We've never met Mickey before, but we've read all about her. She's a kind of legend in the world of speaking and life coaching. So I'm excited about that. And then, you know, for those who are, again, you know, healthy homeowners, we're all about that stuff. And I know that the season is here. We're all going to indulge a little bit more. But when you get past this and you're going to say to yourself, what do I eat now? I gained my holiday 10, but what do I eat now? There's all these leftovers and all this kind of stuff. Author Tammy A. Ross, who's coming in to talk about this, has a book on the topic, a little more specific. You know, really what she's trying to do is help people who, you know, different types of diabetes and how it affects people. And then, you know, once you get diagnosed with something like that, it becomes more of like, what do I eat now?
Right. She said that was always the first question that anybody asked her with that diagnosis.
But I think it's such a broader question to be asked, you know, in terms of just anybody's ready for change in their life. And by the way, my theory on diabetes is a little bit straightforward in the sense that it's probably the food that got you there 9 out of 10 times, depending on the type of diabetes. So it's only makes sense that food will get you out of that situation. So author Tammy A. Ross will be here towards the end of the show to talk about it. Oh, let's see. Did we cover everything here yet? No, other than our giveaways here, Ross, I'd love to talk about this because Ross, for those of you who don't follow the show and are new to us, welcome. We're here every Sunday from 1 to 3. My name is Frank Fontana, and my producer extraordinaire, Ross Cochran, is moments away from, well, his wife is moments away from giving birth.
Yeah, yeah.
By moments, I mean days.
You know, days. It could happen.
It seriously could happen. Right, you can get a phone call while the show is airing right now.
Yes.
Which, by the way, your cryptic Instagram posts with your wife, like, you know, posing sideways with her, you know, giant baby belly out there. And I say giant baby belly specifically because she's a wonderful young lady.
Right.
That should not be offensive.
Yeah.
But
I'll let you know if it is when I get home.
Right. Thank you. I appreciate that. Sorry, honey, if you're listening. But my point being is you leave it as if you're almost teasing. Are you doing this on purpose?
No, but apparently I don't know how to write something that is just celebratory. Because multiple times in the past few weeks, I've posted something talking about how great other people have been or how great we had our big last date night over at RPM Italian and Bill Rancic's place. And it was fantastic. And I post something talking about that and I guess just because we're so close to the finish line, everyone just assumes if they see me on social media, it's because my wife is about to have a baby.
Well, I mean, rightfully so. It's kind of, you know, you could just do it to mess with people at this point.
Yeah, and I thought about that. I thought about, like, doing that with our parents, like just texting them and being like, guys, things were so crazy.
Go time.
Go time, just to see what they would do. But, you know, I would like them to be around.
Little fire drill.
Yes.
That's all you tell them and say, hey, this is just a fire drill.
Right.
I just want to make sure you guys are ready.
Yep.
See if how quick Steve jumps out of his sofa. I want to see that.
I do too.
All right, folks, we have a heck of a show lined up. We have some giveaways we're going to be doing. So with that said, we want to hear, because Ross will be in the situation, because we've been asking every week, you know, for the last month, for parental advice. You know,
right.
what could young Ross Cochran here look forward to as the new baby comes home? Of course, we still would love to hear your advice and opinions. So you can always text us 312-981-7200. You can always call. If we hear something real interesting, we'll get you on air and give you a giveaway. But Ross was talking to me off radio about my two worlds have collided.
Yep.
Right there. About what's it like in the labor room? Like, what are some of the craziest labor room stories or labor-ish stories?
Yes.
Like for instance, my dad back in the day. I mean, I come from an old Italian family. Where was he when my mother was pushing me out? Where do you think?
I guess not right next to you.
No. He was playing cards, drinking wine with my grandfather, my mother's father.
Yeah.
How times have changed.
Yes, because I'm going to be there.
Yeah, he was just hanging out eating salami and cheese and bread and drinking wine, and they were laughing, playing cards, while my poor mom was doing all the hard work, and my dad just got the phone call, and then they went to the hospital.
Right.
These days, God forbid, you're not at the hospital. You're like never going to see the child.
Right. So, you know, at this point, if you are giving me advice,
it's more like advice for your dad.
It's too late. The advice at this point is too late. So I just want to hear the funny stories. Like my dad was talking to the doctor, didn't realize my mom who had an epidural, that her leg had fallen off the bed. Steve Alexander, who is regularly in for Orion Samuelson, he fell asleep on the spare bed while his wife at the time was in labor.
Yeah.
Dave Ennett.
So what are your funny labor stories? We want to hear the funniest ones. We'll get on air or we'll talk about them or read your text. 312-981-7200. Call or text them in. And we have gift certificates for Lumal Nalities. Visit one of their 42 Chicagoland locations. For more information, you can visit LumalNalities.com. Or you can get a Lightkeeper Pro, and these will keep your Christmas lights from going out. It's a great little repair tool. You can watch the video at LightkeeperPro.com. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll get the show on the road.
It's not just home improvement. It's life improvement.
No, you're not alone.
The Frank Fontana Show.
Because I'm going to make this place your home.
On Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Hey, folks, that's me. Thanks for hanging out. We're here till 3 o'clock. And last week, if you were joining us, we started talking about design trends for 2016 and what's on the horizon. And there's still so many more things are coming out in the design news and the world of home improvement and you know, interiors and products that I just thought it was warranting another conversation, a further conversation, this time bringing in a fellow expert in the design world. We are talking to Robin Wilson, who's the CEO of Robin Wilson Home and author of Clean Design, Wellness for Your Lifestyle. Hey, Robin, how are you? Hey, Robin.
Theo.
There she is. How's it going?
Very, very good. The cold weather's coming in, isn't it?
Oh, yes. It's freezing. And, well, it's just warming up. We're actually going to have a decent week here in the Midwest. Chicago is looking to potentially hit 57 next week.
Oh, my.
That is a heat wave.
It's 51 in New York, so that's a perfect day.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for this time of year, it's a perfect day. Hey, so let's start off talking about your book a little bit. Tell us about Clean Design.
Clean Design was a germination of all of the ideas, all of the various spaces that we've designed over the years, and we decided to put it together in one compendium with chapters similar to the joy of cooking. So if you have a bedroom issue, you turn to the bedroom chapter. If you want to learn how to clean something, there's a cleaning chapter. And we have all these little secrets because my grandmother happened to be a housekeeper, and we found her book when she passed, and it's this amazing set of tricks and tips that you can do with natural materials like vinegar and toothpaste and things like that. So you mentioned kids earlier. Did you know that toothpaste cleans crayon off the walls?
No, but I do know as a mild abrasive, you could use it for a slew of things, but I haven't tried that on the wall, which I do have plenty of crayon on the wall. You know, it's fascinating to me that, you know, you hear often that for generations, people have left recipe books down from, you know, wife to mother to grandmother, but never a cleaning manual, so to speak. That's fascinating to me.
That's right. So we have a whole chapter in cleaning, and it's at the very beginning of that chapter, and it says grandmother's tips. And all sorts of things you could do with lemon juice and vinegar and toothpaste. And so we put a few of them in there, not all of them, but a few of them in there.
Well, I wonder back then if it was just a matter of lack thereof that they, you know, were innovative, because now you're seeing in the marketplace, in the stores, in the supermarkets, products that are all lemon based or all, you know, natural, so to speak, which is kind of where your grandma was when, you know, before her time.
I think everyone was there. I don't think you had the grocery stores. People wouldn't spend, you know, $8 or $10 for a cleaner. They were going to find a way to do it with baking soda or vinegar or any other number of things. So anyway, Clean Design, it's a book that covers the 15 years of work we've done, projects from President Clinton's Harlem office to Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s private residence to various celebrities in their private spaces. And we show pictures and we reference products that we really like. And it's a good opportunity to see what we've done on eco-friendly design. And as an ambassador to the Asthma and Allergy Foundation of America, I'm pretty much an expert on the wheezing and sneezing inside and the wheezing and sneezing outside.
Oh, we have so much to talk about then, Robin, because I think your expertise goes far beyond what's written in your bio, because I think that's a really interesting topic, you know, especially when you're talking about introducing materials into the interior of a home. You know, things like flooring that potentially, you know, can create mold issues if not installed properly, or the actual product itself. If you're using synthetic flooring, the glues and the adhesives and layers of material they use, people don't, you know, that I've often been told, oh, I love that new home smell. Well,
that is actually what you should not love, because
exactly.
I mean, everything in your house is off-gassing, volatile organic compounds, which often people hear as VOCs. Those are basically the man-made chemicals that in some cases make paint adhere to the walls, or maybe it's a polymer that that is ingrained in an engineered floor or something. And that smell is something that you should say, oh my, I want it to air out.
Yes, and open those windows.
Exactly, exactly. And so we actually devote part of our book about that. And I think the challenge that we have today is so many people don't realize that what you bring into your home affects your ecosystem. It affects your long-term health. And when we hear about the short-term wheezing, we don't think that's actually taxing on our lungs. And that's a long-term effect. So short-term, you're wheezing. Long-term, you could have a severe respiratory issue.
Sure. And there's a lot to talk about. This is a topic. We're talking with author Robin Wilson, who's the CEO and founder of Robin Wilson Home. Her book is Clean Design. We're going to have to go take a break. And then, Robin, I want you to hang out through the news, because we'll get into some of these the top 10 hottest design trends and you know, ideas from your book that people can use at home. All right?
That would be great.
All right, folks. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Testing, testing, uno, dos, tres, catorce.
He's the go-to guru for great design ideas.
Not that there's anything wrong with us.
He's edgy. He's in your face.
The lead designer and host of HGTV's Design on a Dime.
The Frank Fontana Show. It's not just home improvement, it's life improvement.
That's right. We improve one life each Sunday. That's my goal. Just change one person's life on some level. Anyway, we are talking about, you know, the 10 hottest trends that you're going to see in 2016. I'm joined with CEO and founder of Robin Wilson Home and author of Clean Design, Robin Wilson. How are you?
I'm fine.
Thanks for hanging out through the news break here. Hi, folks out there on Michigan Ave. Look at you guys hanging out. It's a little cold out there. Sorry, just saying hi to the folks outside the window here at the Allstate studio. So let's get into this. I have a list in front of me of 10 trends that we're going to see emerge. And then if you're willing to and you want to hang, we're going to have a discussion a little later on about Pantone's new color choices. Now, don't say them. We're going to keep it a surprise for those who don't know it. We're going to talk about that last year's color and how this year's color palette, and I'm sure you might be in agreement with me, are much more applicable in a wide array of designs. So let's start with what you should look out for 2016 in hot design trends and home and styling. First, with countertops, the blessed countertop conversation. You suggest that quartz stone countertops are going to see a huge emergence.
I do believe that. So many people recognize that they want a low-maintenance countertop. When you have a stone countertop, first of all, you're using natural resources that are never going to be replaced. And second, when you use a quartz, like a Silestone or Caesarstone or other brands, what ends up happening is they're blemish-free, they're basically perfect, they're maintenance-free, and in the case of the two brands I mentioned earlier, they actually have antibacterial coatings. So if you're cooking chicken, for example, you don't have to worry about a fissure as you would in a stone, or maybe there's bacteria gathering within that fissure.
Sure. And that makes a lot of sense, too. I have natural stone, and we're starting to see a little bit of those fissuring, effects happening, some pocketing here and there, which I got to be honest with you. I know food gets caught in that stuff, but I'm one for a little bit of a time-worn feel and a little bit of a distressed value to my particular design at home. So I'm a fan of, like, you know, used Carrera, where you're seeing all of the, you know, the stains and the blemishes and stuff, but that's my personal aesthetic. But I, as far as far as clients, I do see a trend upward in the synthetics, like the Sile Stone and the Caesar Stone. So you're right on there. Number two, shades of white. Talk to me about shades of white.
You know, people don't realize I've actually, and you've probably done this when you're as a designer, someone says, well, I want white.
Yeah.
And you look at them and you say, there's 96 shades of white. And they say, oh, really? And then you end up spending 4 hours with them at the paint store trying to figure out which shade of white. So I think the key is to tell people there are a lot of white options that range from the blue hues to the brown hues to the pink hues to just what I call the white 01, the primary white that everyone thinks about on their baseboard trim.
Mm-hmm.
There's
yeah.
so many options.
My go-to white is Dove White. It's a slightly...
I love Dove White. Yep.
Yeah. So to me, that's my universal, and I try not to even give my clients an option on the white when it comes to simple things like baseboards and trim and all that stuff, because, I mean, you're splitting hairs at that point. You know?
Right, exactly.
So
my favorite on the ceiling is Cotton Balls. I don't know if you've seen that, but it's a wonderful, reflective white, and it's warm. And if you mix that Cotton Balls with the Dove White on the wall, it's beautiful. Both areas will pop, the ceiling and the wall.
I agree with you there. Now, undermounted sinks. I have one. I know a lot of people are starting to do this. And let's talk about what an undermount sink is and why it's going to be a huge trend in 2016.
Well, again, we talked about bacteria. We talk about clean spaces or clean design. It's a way for the sink to be mounted under the countertop with an epoxy-type glue. And when you are cooking or making something on your countertop, you just do a swish with your hand, and it goes right into the sink. There's no lip for the food or other material to travel over. It's a really clean look. And more importantly, it's an antibacterial look. You can imagine if you ever were to pull out an old sink and the caulk maybe wasn't strong at one area, you're going to see a lot of gunk under the sink. So this is a clean design.
That's right. And they come in all different styles. I personally have a hammered copper sink. That it fits my, I have this kind of farm in, you know, farmhouse feel to my home. And but here's the quick little sidebar story here, Robin, that you can appreciate. My mom was in town a few months ago, and she's probably listening. She's going to kill me. But she's like, oh, I'm going to clean your kitchen for you. You guys go out with the kids, whatever. I come back, and my copper sink is gleaming, sparkling copper. I'm like, wow, that's beautiful, Mom. And then she left a couple days later, and I did not have the heart to tell her that she Brillo and scrubbed and scoured the entire coating off of my copper sink that was not cheap. And I didn't have the heart to tell her that she basically scrubbed so hard she took off the protective coating.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So now I live with it. There's days where I like it because, it looks very much like vibrant copper. And my wife tends to like that look. I love the original look, which is more of a distressed bronzish, copper.
Mm-hmm.
That really, it's an oil sealer that they put on there.
Right.
And I imagine I could find that somewhere.
I have no idea. You know what? You should call the manufacturer and see if they have it before it patinas to a different color, green.
It's there, yeah. But that's kind of cool. We have ways to keep it. I've tried everything from rubbing it with coconut oil, like you name it. I'm trying, but worst case scenario, how can I tell my mom she screwed my sink up? I mean,
you just told the world. So ouch.
But she lives in
Happy
Florida.
Happy holidays. Yeah. I think you're.
Love you, Mom.
You lump of coal. Lump of coal.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, this show is therapeutic for me. I feel better now. I finally said it. But I honestly held nothing back on her. She was doing a good thing for me. How can I be mad? Anyway,
That's true.
Open kitchen and great room concepts. Okay, so now you're really getting into the bigger picture here. because you're definitely seeing this on HGTV and FYI and all the design shows out there, that the open floor concept, all these designers are ripping walls off left and right, trying to create an open feel. Why is this so important for everybody?
I think it's important because in a certain manner of living, we, with our smart devices, smartphones, are not talking to each other. And when you have an open concept kitchen, you can still be in the same room. People are still interacting a little bit better than they might be if they were just going to their corner of the house. So it opens the whole house up, and you can at least see that there's a person across from you, and you're not competing potentially with their smartphone or their smart device. That's one reason. Two, you can have the smallest place in the whole wide world, and it can feel much larger. You're also, it's sort of like a loft concept in your public spaces. The only sad part is you have to be really clean and neat, or people are going to know that you're a messy person.
From the minute you walk in the door.
Exactly. But I think it's a wonderful way to bring the family together. And I also don't like the old dusty formal dining room or living room where no one lives, and you leave it pristine. And so when you do that great room concept, every room is used. Every space is used.
That's so true. And you're seeing it even with new homes. In contradiction, you know, I have a 100-year-old home that's A-frame construction. And the thought process and design back in the day was very like, you know, you had a parlor room. You had another room. You had a side room. Everything was a room for some reason. They had, when we renovated our home, we had opened up walls that had, they were 12 inches deep, the walls, thick. And we were like, God, what is in here? We opened them up. They had pocket doors, and they had the casings all built in for it. So I guess the thinking and the thought process back then, it's hard to say. You know, is it just very segmented and smaller families, less necessity? Because what's so different now than then in terms of family and home? Why do you think that design was so prominent back in the day? And now we're just ripping all these old walls down.
You're going to love this. I actually happened to take a tour of the Thomas Edison House in New Jersey. And I asked that question because he had big rooms. And they said back then, 100 years ago, people didn't have heating and cooling efficiency or perhaps even insulation efficiency like we have today. A very wealthy person did, as they could have wide open spaces. But a typical person might have a fireplace that would heat a room. And so throughout the day, if you notice in your home, I bet you the rooms that are more covered by sun in the morning would be more of a dining area. And then as you go throughout the day, it ends up that you're on the other side of the house that has been warmed by the sun all day. And that's where your day ends.
Interesting.
And that is because they took advantage of placement on a lot. And where the sun and the wind would blow. And I think if you look back then, they really architecturally had to account for the fact that people didn't have air conditioning.
They had to consider nature. With that said, we have a what used to be their freezer almost dug out in the basement where they used to keep cold food, really. You know, back in the day before there was electric freezers, they had the coldest spot in the house was, you know, a hole in the basement.
A cellar. That's right.
A cellar. But this was actually a subsidiary cellar that they had built specifically, and they had a food port, a little door that opened up on the side they used to drop food into, which is fascinating. It's the potential that Al Capone could have a tunnel under my house.
Yes, or the rodents do.
Either one, right. Either one. Robin, we have to take a quick break here. We'll get to the rest of these, or we'll post these on our Facebook page on WGN Radio, as well as my Facebook and social media pages for the rest of these tips. We always try to get through these, but we never quite do it. So maybe we'll extend it to next week, too. And if you have the time, we're going to be talking about Pantone's hottest colors after this break. You want to stick around?
I can stick around for just a little bit and look forward to it.
All I want is your 2 cents, and then we'll let you go. How about that?
All right.
All right, folks, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This segment sponsored by MegaPros.com. Go Mega or go home. Welcome back to the Frank Fontana Show, folks. We are wrapping up our conversation with author and CEO of Robin Wilson Homes, Miss Robin Wilson. Robin, thanks for hanging out. We appreciate
it's
your
been
time.
Fun.
Yeah,
I love laughing. This is a great show.
Fantastic. Thank you. We like to keep it light and humorous and entertaining at the same time. yet informative. So
informative.
Speaking definitely. Of which, I know you're on a little bit of a time frame here. Let's give out a place where people can find you, Robin. So you have a website, a Facebook page?
Yes, absolutely. Go to robinwilsonhome.com. We have Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest, and more importantly, cleandesignbook.com. Our book has won 4 awards in the last few months, and we came out in April with a book that helps people with their lifestyle and their wellness.
Great stuff, Robin. We love to hear it, and we I'd love to have you back on to talk about how you got into the Clintons' home and all that stuff, and some
it
of these
was their office.
It's their
it
office.
Was their office, actually. Yes.
getting there is the fun story, though. You know, we deal with clients all day long, and getting and dealing with some of these celebrity clients is always a tricky, slippery slope. So we'll save that for another conversation. Right now, I want to talk briefly before you go about your thoughts on Pantone's 2016 Colors of the Year Rose Quartz, and what is the other one here? The blue, that kind of powdery blue. I lost my note here, but what do you think of the do you think of the color palette?
It's interesting because a lot of people said it was a surprise, and what I think is it harkens back to a classic moment in time.
By the way, the other color is called Serenity, for just to be technical.
Oh, Serenity. So it's a classic moment in time. It's making people recognize that you don't have to be loud and wild, and you can you can find a zen set of colors. I think for some people it was surprising, for others it's like, okay, it's something realistic that I can recommend to a client.
Well, it really it is. And in Pantone, I always argue this, and I'm sure the people at Pantone just love me for this. What gives them the right? You know, it's like, who says, what if I wake up and I want black to be the it color for 2017? You know, like what right. makes them any more important right. than me?
I think it's a great press release. It gives their company an opportunity to tell people to inject color into their lives. I think all too often we do stick with the whites and the neutrals. And
I call that topia. People love living.
That's right.
They love living in topia.
And that's right. I actually helped design a neighborhood. If you've been to Lake Nona down in Orlando, and there's a wonderful development down there. It's on my website, but we helped design a color palette for all those. I think there's 1,600 houses now. And the exciting thing about it is they said, we don't want taupe. We don't want beige. We don't want brown. We want color.
Wait, did you say in fact, Florida they said they don't want taupe?
That's right.
Yes,
we have a whole neighborhood. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. They have an entire neighborhood that is bright colors, and it's a walking community. It's around their medical center in Orlando. And so when you look at that color palette of those houses, it just knocks your socks off.
That's fantastic. I love to hear that. You know, I always encourage people to live outside the color box, when appropriate. Obviously, some designs call for a more muted tone. But what I like about Pantone's choices is they are muted tones. They're more applicable than last year's oxblood choice, whatever that was. It was like a burnt rue type of color. But, like this to me, I could see definitely being a way more popular, way more usable color for the mainstream. And I think you'll see this pop up in design trends all over the place.
Right. And also in fashion. I think fashion does influence design. Design influences fashion. And I think that we're going to start seeing a return to people finding that their home is not a starter home, but it's a home. And with the economy being what it is, a lot of people are staying put and just making their spaces fabulous.
I always, I always encourage people. Ever since I, had small apartments living with roommates, no matter where I live, what my budget was, and I, trust me, I shopped at Goodwill when I had nothing. Everybody started there. If you're college dorm or whatever, or starter apartment, unless you come from money, which I didn't. To me, it was all about making it as stylish as I could within my budget, so that when I brought a girl over, she'd dig me. That was really my that was my motivation right there.
Oh, that's funny. Funny.
And that led to my career. So God bless
you. Led to your career. Congratulations.
Why, thank you. I appreciate it.
I would simply say that today with design, there's so many options. What people need to understand is whatever you do on whatever budget, you know, for example, when people look at our pillows and our comforters that are sold at Bed Bath Beyond, the one thing I tell people is I could sell that pillow for $200 perhaps, but we sell it for $40. It's about affordability. It's about durability. It's about, again, finding something that works for your family. That's and it's right. A good design. It's not just, you know, this moment. It's a good design that's going to last over time.
That's right. Good design over expensive design is always, to me, you know, the better choice. When you can make give suggestions that lead people in the right direction without breaking their bank debts. Because it's easy to go through a catalog or hire the most expensive and innovative. You know, it truly takes a tremendous amount of design chutzpah to go into a space and say, hey, we got a limited budget, but we need to make this fabulous for this family.
That's
true creativity is born. Robin, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate your 2 cents on the Pantone colors. So for you, it's a thumbs up. Yay?
You know, I am cautiously optimistic that it will be adopted.
I like that. I appreciate it, Robin. Thanks so much. Have a good Sunday.
Thank you.
All right. That was Robin Wilson, the author of Clean Design. It sounds like a powerhouse of design outside. Her practice is doing all sorts of big stuff. So it's really cool to chat with her and get her opinion on the Pantone colors. I mean, let's talk quickly before we have to break here. The psychological effects of these colors. All right. So listen to the names. Rose, Quartz, and Serenity. I think they're so appropriate on the bigger scope of the world right now.
Right.
And I don't know. I doubt highly that Pantone had thought behind that, where the world needs a serene color palette right now.
Yeah, things are pretty nutty.
They are. And I do believe if you could have tranquility behind your closed doors and if color can impact that, which psychologically it does. You know, the color you choose to put in your home via art, via furniture, via wall color, anything, absolutely, collectively impacts how you feel day in, day out.
Totally.
Think about that. Right? When you're in such a stressful world outside your door, to come into your home and say, I could block that stuff out. And having the right design helps do that. That's why we're here to try to save the world one design at a time, boss. All right, we have to take a break here, and we'll have some news after that. You know the music, folks. That means it's time for our Wonder Woman series here on the Frank Fontana Show, where we highlight a magnificent, amazing Wonder Woman that lived well and make up our fine Midwest here, for that matter, across the world, because we'll be expanding this segment. This week, we're speaking to somebody really special. She's a life coach, a public speaker, a jack of all trades, a master of them all. Mickey Williams is joining us. Hey, Mickey, how are you?
I'm great, Frank. How you doing?
Was that a good descriptor? Did I miss anything? Because you have like 52 titles.
Yeah, you didn't get them all in, Frank.
Yeah,
come
I tried.
Yeah.
I mean, how are you, Mickey? Thanks for coming to the show.
Oh, delighted to be here. It's a gorgeous day in Chicago, so yay.
It really is. Now, do you live in the Midwest here?
I do. I live on the Gold Coast. I'm an original New Yorker, but I like to say I'm a Midwesterner now. Just love
Chicago.
You and
I are of the same woven fabric. Yeah. I'm an ex-New Yorker, now you know, formerly Chicagoan. How many years do you have to live here to officially call yourself a Chicagoan? Do you know?
I don't know what the official is. I know I declared
Ross,
it after
do you know
one
this?
Year.
One blizzard or two winters.
Right.
Whatever comes first.
For some reason, 8 years stuck in my head. I don't know why.
Somebody's... You met some hardcore Chicagoans.
I did. They really
it takes
gave it to
eight
me.
Years to
I think
official.
They were just trying to mess with me and have
They're telling you to go back to New York.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
It was so funny, Frank. When after New York, I lived in Westport, Connecticut. When I chose to move to Chicago, people in Connecticut going, Chicago, it's so cold. And I said, get over yourself. You live in Connecticut.
Right.
It snows more
Hello,
there.
New York is just as cold.
I
hate to break it to people. Yes. It's just as cold. I live there, you know, equally as long, if not longer. So tell the folks out there listening exactly who Mickey Williams is.
Oh, that's a tough one right off the bat, Frank. All right. How far do we go back?
I would say let's start it from defining moments. What would you say, you know, puts you in track to be the person you are today?
Yeah. Well, as I said earlier, born and raised in New York, then family thing in Westport, Connecticut. Always dreamed of marrying my high school, college sweetheart. I married my college sweetheart and the white picket fence and the country and the family and all of that. And on the road to doing that, went tragically, he was killed in a car accident. He was 29 years old. I had a two-year-old child.
Sorry to hear
I
that.
I was not working. Thank you. I had given up my job to become the proverbial housewife and mother, which I always aspired to be. And I always like to preface that. that by saying because my dad left when I was four. So wow. I grew up with a single mom. And so I always dreamed of having that family unit. And I had a great time in New York with my single mom. I remember ice skating at Rockefeller Center and dance classes at the New York City Ballet. Yeah. I mean, I really had the best of all worlds. But I really
So your mom did the right thing by
she,
you.
She really did. I never felt deprived of the family life. But I grew up wanting it. And so when that happened again and I didn't get that, it was time to say, what next? And what next was just drawing on my natural skill set.
Survival, I would imagine, at that point.
Yeah. You know, it's so interesting, Frank. Years later, somebody asked me that question. I said, well, I didn't have a choice. And they said to me, no, you did. You could have had a lifelong pity party and gone on welfare and done this and done that. But I didn't. And so that's part of what I speak about nowadays to inspire people. But the neat thing about it was that I'd been a dancer in New York. So I started teaching dance, which eventually became one of the biggest dance schools in the country. I didn't know I had this business part of me.
And you had a couple clients that have some pretty reputable names out there.
I did. I had Joanne Woodward and Patty Hearst and Martha Stewart. And yeah, I had a very...
Is this back in Martha's modeling days, pre-Homemaker?
No, I think it was post that. Are you trying to get my age, Frank?
No. Okay. No, I know better than to ask a woman's age. I don't want to get punched across the radio room here. So you transitioned from dance to...
Well, then I was also a really good cook. So I started catering. Martha and I doing our little thing together at the same time, 1978, actually.
Wow.
Yeah, and my catering business was called The Happy Cooker. I'll give you a minute to laugh, Frank. And so I was juggling these businesses and they were growing and I was getting a lot of press out of it because, you know, back then, 60s, 70s, there weren't a lot of women in the workplace and I was juggling all these different businesses.
And how many kids do you have?
Just the one.
So yeah. You had you're a single mom with
a
kid.
Yeah.
An entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And were you funded? Did you have, like, because that's the other side of it. It's like one thing, people can say, well, if she had money, this sounds like it'd be easy.
No, I had nothing. I was left with nothing. You don't expect someone to die at 29.
Sure.
So we didn't have money at all. I had a mortgage.
You're still developing a life plan at that point of
absolutely.
Like, what are we going to do?
And yeah. So I just did what I could using my natural talents and they just blossomed and grew into big businesses. And then from there, it just was one business after the, I found out I love starting businesses. I love growing them. Then I get bored. And that's why I've had
You don't have to be an Aries by chance, are you?
No, I'm a Cancer Leo.
Like that. Yeah. So you start a business and it takes off. Now you're in the world of public speaking and you're speaking in front of corporations and major executives.
Yes.
And, you know, what do you think this mom, dance mom / cook who's turned her business into 50 different things, now you're talking to major CEOs that run global businesses. I mean, do they look at you and go, why is she here and what is she going to teach me?
Not from the credential side, probably from the physical side.
That's what I mean.
Like
you walk in because you're so bubbly.
I'm flamboyant.
You're flamboyant. let me describe for the viewing, the listening audience what Mickey's wearing. So she's got the leopard skin rocking on the top with a little bit of sparkle coming through. She's got these jewel red earrings coming down that are flashing in the light. You know, a blondish, cherryish hue to the hair. I mean, she's rocking it. She's got giant rose rings on. I mean, come on. You can't not help but smile when she walks in the room. So I get it. You're bringing a complete different juxtaposition to what these people are used to in their life.
Yes.
So you're on stage. Everyone's staring at you. What's your opening line?
Well, it depends on my presentation, but let me go back a little bit.
Yeah.
After dance, one of the careers that I segued into was fitness, and fitness became a really big thing when health clubs were proliferating in the 80s.
Sure.
So I got very well known in the fitness industry, and then after, again, running the health club, getting a name, traveling the world.
Was this when, like, Jack LaLanne's were real big?
Well, and yes, a little younger than the Jack LaLanne's.
Well,
yes.
No, what I mean, like, when he started the gyms, actually,
absolutely.
And they were all over the place.
Yeah.
Because he was on TV way, you know. In early 40s or something like that.
Yeah, and I was part of that whole fitness thing, and I traveled the world teaching master classes and everything. And then when I sold that business, that's when I decided to go into professional speaking. But here's where the challenge came in. I had a fitness background. I had a dance background. I had a catering background, to your point.
Yeah.
So I wasn't getting hired, so I thought I'll go back to, you know, as the Buddhists say, bloom where you're planted. So I went back into fitness and started speaking instead of running a club. And then right from there, one day – a woman brought her husband, who worked for a little firm called Ernst & Young.
Yeah.
And he asked me if I would be the keynoter for the first Entrepreneur of the Year banquet.
Wow.
And in that audience was Fred DeLuca of Subway and Stu Leonard and Victor Kiam of Remington Rand. And that launched my professional career.
Unreal. Well, pause right there. We have to take a quick break. We're going to have more with Mickey Williams and her story when we come back. And if you guys have any questions for Mickey or you want to chime in with some of these memories, we'd love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. Or if you are a budding Wonder Woman and you want to kind of get the blueprint, we're here to help. And then we also want to hear of other stories out there. If you got a Wonder Woman you want to nominate, Ross Cochran is here to take your call and your info. You could text in the information or email us. We'll certainly listen, and we want to hear the stories about the amazing Wonder Women out there. All right, folks, we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Frank Fontana Show. I'm Frank Fontana. Joining me is Wonder Woman, Mickey Williams, and she's just not wonderful. She's amazing. She's a public speaker. She's everything to everything, and she's been, I would say, seven different careers, been on 27 different continents and on 100,000 stages in front of many millions of people. Mickey, thanks for taking the time to stop here on Sunday before you leave for California tomorrow.
Right. Well, if there's 27 continents, Frank, then I haven't done
I've made up a few, okay? Because I just imagine you'd be there anyway.
Yeah, I didn't do Antarctica because I can't wear my stilettos there.
Not yet.
Yeah.
Not yet is the key word here.
Okay.
Mickey, so we left off talking about, you know, what got you there. And then, you know, when you're on stage with some of these big wigs, it sounds like it's a chain reaction. So, you know, you get invited to speak at one forum. All of a sudden in the audience are these major heads of corporations. They're like, we want this gal from New York to come with her, you know, bubbly self and amazing attitude and do what to our company? Like, what are they bringing you? What's like your main purpose?
Yeah, well, it varies. I have a lot of different topics, and they've changed over the years, too. And you basically, you know, I coach speakers now, and I coach executives on how to give presentations. So it's really about where they're coming from, what their credibility is. And it's the same thing with me. I used to speak on 15 different topics. I speak
in 27 different continents.
Yes, exactly. I speak on seven main topics now. One I call quality of life issues, and kind of like you when you talk about the home. And it's not just the home you're talking about, the spirit of it, the lifestyle.
Yes.
So I have a presentation called A Balancing Act, Walking the Tightrope of Life. And that was my signature speech. We call that in the professional speaking industry.
Yeah.
And it was so popular, it's now part of a trilogy.
Oh, wow.
So it's part one, part two, and part three. And then I do a lot of programs on, I have Speak Loudly and Carry a Big Shtick, teaching people how to give speeches.
Right.
I have The Art and Heart of Storytelling, which is
really
big
now.
Well,
what is your secret? Let's talk about it. If you're willing to divulge a little bit, because there's a lot of women out there, and this segment's geared towards women. Not that we're discouraging men not to listen to this portion of the show, but, you know, you're getting back out into the workforce. You know, you're a single mom.
Right.
And there's a lot of single moms probably listening to the show right now in a position to get the motivation, get the fire, get the spirit back. You know, so let's talk about it. What would you say to me if I was a single, petite little mother with one child that I needed to go back to work with? What would you say?
I would say the same thing if you're a big, rugged man who needed to
tell
go back
then,
to work.
Tell me then.
A combination of things, Frank. I would say, number one, you have to find out what your passion is, your goal. And if you don't know what your goal is, you back into it.
Right.
I didn't, you know, after the nine careers, I didn't know what was next. I didn't know it was professional speaking. So one day, just being very frustrated because I couldn't set a new goal, I came up with objectives, and that led me to it. Objectives, number one, being travel. Number two, being people. Number three, being glamour. I know that's shocking. Number four, being unlimited financial opportunity. And I didn't come up with professional speaking right away. I came up with hotels. I want to run a hotel. So I went back to college to get my master's degree in hotel management. Started going out doing some work at hotels just to see if I liked the atmosphere. That was cool. I did. I wasn't it. I said, what else do hotel people do? They hire meeting planners. What's that? I went to the trade association, became a meeting planner. Found out I liked part of that, but didn't have all four objectives, and eventually wound up speaking. So I'm very goal-oriented. And when I'm coaching
someone.
Right,
so you make it like, it's just like, oh, I want this. I'm getting that. Why do you think there's so much resistance to people who don't have success, that don't go after what they, what is the problem, so to speak?
People give up too soon, in my opinion. Tenacity is one of my greatest strengths and something that you have to teach people. It's confidence in who you are. Authentically, you and I talked about that.
Right.
And also just sticking to it. I believe most people give up too easy.
Well, you're hearing a lot about this in the millennials. You know, when you read articles on and read, you know, listen to TV shows, they talk about this all the time. how the millennial, they're in fear of our next generation, you know, what's going to happen? Because the attitude of the millennial is, I can't afford this. I'm going to go back and live in my mom's basement, and, you know, the world's cruel to me, and there's no opportunities, and, you know, it's like a pity party, so to speak. Where is that attitude that you're talking about? You know, how do we reinstill this in these young folks out there that, not everybody, you know, I don't want to group this into everybody and every kid out there, but there's a reason why all the mass media is talking about it, because there's probably some truth to it.
You know, that's interesting, Frank, because I spoke all over the world. That was my goal. And you get the things like, well, the Germans are this and the French are that. And I went in with the attitude, no, don't tell me that the Germans won't laugh. They're human. If I do something funny, they'll laugh.
Right.
So I've always had that kind of attitude. And I guess I do about generations, too. I think I've mentioned I coach executives and I run these think tanks through Vistage International. And I have millennials in my group. And so, yes, what you're saying is true to a point, but I'm not going to classify them because the ones I work with don't have that attitude at all.
Sure. And I think that obviously they're working with you and they're in that mindset. And I'd love to see a shift completely into this mindset, because it's what I attribute to success and or lack thereof is the burning in the belly, I call it, that desire to succeed no matter what.
And that's exactly what I'm talking about. But that's that tenacity. You know,
the visceral, like it's that
yes.
thing. I don't want to say you're either born with it or you're not, but I kind of do believe that on some level. You either are born with that fire in your belly or something happens to you that ignites that fire.
Yeah.
So is there not enough happening to the millennials that don't have this?
For me, it goes back to that word choice again.
Mm.
I don't say everybody's going to become a widow and that's where everybody has to have tragedy to be successful or to be tenacious or any of those things.
Yeah.
But I do think, like you said, you're either born with it in some way or you decide, you make a choice to get it, or you mirror, you model the people who haven't. You say, I'm going to get it. You know, when people hire me as a coach, the first thing I say to them is, you know, I'm not everyone's cup of tea. I'm from New York. I'm very direct.
Yeah.
I might forget to compliment you as soon as we start.
Right.
But I'm going to get you where you want to go.
And you're going to love me at the end of
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah, I agree. Hey, tell me about this, the prestigious $1 million roundtable. What exactly is that and you're a part of?
Well, I'm not part of.
We're addressing.
It's an organization. Actually, it's in Illinois, and it's for financial service professionals, the largest, most prestigious organization. You have to qualify. Anyone in financial services gets to go to the roundtable if they've sold $1 million worth of products or services. And for speakers, professional speakers, it's the epitome of one of the great gigs that you can possibly get. You're facing 7,000 people from all over the world.
Well, imagine the likes of like Tony Robbins and all those.
Yeah, it's very prestigious. So,
yeah.
And that was the one gig that took me all over the world. From that one gig,
wow.
I got to speak in Singapore and South Africa. And South Africa, I got to be the first American speaker to tour South Africa after apartheid, and I spoke at Mandela's home.
Wow.
And that was pretty cool.
Fascinating. So how do people find out more information about you? Where can they go to?
Well, I have a website, mickeywilliams.com, and I'll tell you ahead of time, it could scare a lot of people. If you think I'm flamboyant in person, where do you go to the website?
It's a reflection of your personality, let's just say
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but you know what? If I'm not for you, I'm not for you.
Right.
You got to get past my shtick to realize there's a lot of information.
Depth in, right.
Yeah, a lot of depth here, too. So, yeah, mickeywilliams.com. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Facebook. I'm on
that's M-I-K-K-I,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
All right. Mickey, thank you so much for joining me. We appreciate it. This is fascinating.
We
got to have you back.
Thank
There's so much
Frank.
More we can get into.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Thank you.
Well, don't you know that other kids are starving in Japan? So eat it. Just eat it.
That's right, folks. We're talking healthy homeowners and how to stay trim through the holidays. While other shows will be giving you recipes and things to make you fat, we will try to keep you skinny. Whatever.
Good catchphrase.
Yeah, you like that?
Yeah. Like we'll that. Try to keep you skinny or
yes,
whatever.
Right. While you're getting fat, including me. Oh, by the way, happy Hanukkah to those celebrating Hanukkah. It starts today. That means it's also 19 days till Christmas. So enjoy all that. The lucky Hanukkah kids get both, man. I know a lot of my friends growing up used to get both Christmas presents and Hanukkah. They had one dad who was Catholic and one who was Jewish and no mother that was Jewish, and they used to just get everything. I was so jealous as a kid. Anyway, I digress. All right, let's talk to our author in our Healthy Homeowner segment. The book is called What Do I Eat Now? Tammy A. Ross is joining us. Hey, Tammy.
Hey, how are you? Good to be with you today.
Why, thank you. It's good to have you on the show. We're kind of talking about, you know, obviously your book is you know, addressing the issue of diabetes, and I certainly want to get into that. But it's also the time of year where people are consuming a lot more food than usual, which in some cases, actually, food is the cause of certain types of diabetes, correct?
Well, you know, with type 2 diabetes, which is a type of diabetes that's most prevalent, 95% of people have type 2 diabetes, it can very much be impacted by weight. And, of course, weight is impacted by what we eat, particularly at this time of year, you know, so many different eating occasions. So what you eat can definitely play into the weight, which can increase the risk for type 2 diabetes if you're overweight.
So how about people who aren't overweight but have diabetes? Is it still eating?
Yeah, you know, the other main type of diabetes is type 1, and it's not caused necessarily by being overweight, but it's more an autoimmune type disease. So those folks, they develop diabetes pretty rapidly and have to take insulin in order to, you know, in order to survive. So it's a little bit different than type 2.
Well, you know what's interesting, Tammy, is I have a family member who had type 1. And it was diagnosed when she was like 4 or something, and she's like 40 something now, and has got it under control where she barely needs insulin now. And there was an incident that happened early in her childhood that the doctors had said this kind of sparked it. Is it true that a psychological event can actually spark or ignite a type 1 diabetes? Does that make any sense to you at all?
Well, you know, any type of stress on the body can definitely elevate the blood sugar. So whether folks have type 1 or type 2, if they are under any type of emotional stress or sickness, illness, that can elevate the blood sugars. And what I see in practice with type 1 diabetes is we see a lot of new cases during flu season. So, you know, the thought is that potentially a virus may play some role in kind of sparking that, as you said. So I think that's, yeah, it's the great unknown that we're still trying to figure out what exactly is the cause of type 1 diabetes.
So does it lie dormant in everybody's body until activated?
No, not necessarily. That's a really great question because, you know, that's what we're still trying to figure out is what exactly causes it. We know with type 2 that genetics very much comes into play. That's the type of diabetes that used to be called adult onset diabetes, but we see it now in teens and children as well. It can occur at any age. But with that, you know, as we get older, as we gain weight, as we become maybe less active, all of those can play into triggering type 2 diabetes. And again, type 1, we think, is an autoimmune disease, or it may be sparked by a virus or some other unknown cause at this point.
So, because, I mean, my theory, and I might be alone in this, but I don't think so. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of doctors who we bring on the show to talk about, you know, how to stay a healthy homeowner. You know, I think to me, you hit it on the head that it all begins and ends with food, regardless, in my opinion, and a lot of doctors that I speak to, of genetics and all the other factors that can play. It's what we put in our bodies that trigger every illness that happens to us. Wouldn't you say?
I think, you know, what we eat absolutely triggers and comes into play in terms of, you know, blood glucose, gaining weight, heart disease, all kinds of different health problems. It does come down to what we eat. And when we think about the holidays and all of the different eating occasions, you know, one of the things that I encourage my patients is to think about what do you put on your plate and, you know, try to work in more vegetables. A lot of times during the holidays, that's something that we avoid or, you know, don't get on our
plate.
Well,
no, let's be real. They're buried in 2 pounds of cheese usually.
Exactly.
So you are getting your veggies. You're just getting a lot of other stuff on top of them.
A lot of other extras, right. But, you know, if we think about half your plate is veggies, a fourth of your plate is lean meat about the size of the palm of your hand, and then a fifth-sized portion of the starchy-type grains, starchy foods, that's going to help bring more balance to your portion. So I tell people, use your hand to help you make sure that your portions aren't creeping up and getting bigger during the holidays. So that's one little tip that can help.
Hey, Tammy, what is your theory on inflammation? Because, again, a lot of doctors I bring on the show have narrowed down a lot of disease to the cause of cellular inflammation caused by consumption of alcohol, food, drugs, tobacco, whatever it is, the cause of the inflammatory cause. So when you say things like, you know, a handful of starch, Now, there's staunch believers that is not even should be on your plate. Like, you know, this book's called Grain Brain. Have you read Grain Brain before or have heard of it?
I haven't read that, but I'm familiar with it. Okay.
So you know where I'm going with this. The idea that
I do
the potential of a starch or a carbohydrate shooting up your blood sugar levels because basically it gets, you know, broken down to glucose at the end of the day, any way you cut it.
Mm-hmm.
Is it advisable for folks to cut back on the amount of carbohydrates? Do you believe that it causes inflammation on a cellular level, thus, you know, creating the off vibration in our body to create disease?
You know, that's a really interesting question. That's something we're seeing more and more about in the news. And when it comes to carbohydrate, a couple of tips that I would recommend, you know, for general good health, for those that may have prediabetes, which is increases the risk for developing type 2 diabetes, is to really look at carbohydrate control. You know, our body needs carbohydrate, but, you know, refined carbohydrates are not necessarily the best choice. What I recommend to my patients is when you think about your grain portions, make half of your grains at least whole grains. So what that would mean is if you were going to have rice, go with brown rice over white rice. Or, you know, corn is a whole grain. So thinking of oats are whole grains. So thinking about at least half of your grains as whole grains as opposed to the more processed and refined foods. Kind of my mantra is stick close to nature. The more that you can stick close to nature, the healthier food choices generally are.
Correct. And with that said, sticking to the outer aisles of the grocery store versus the inner aisles is definitely a better idea, right?
That's a great tip. If you think about grocery stores, supermarkets, most of the fresh foods are found around the perimeter. And when we venture into those inner aisles, that's where you're going to find more of the processed foods. Now, that's not to say that everything on the inner aisles should not be eaten, but I would say be more aware about your choices as you venture into the inner aisles and pay a little bit closer attention to sodium, the carbohydrate in the foods that you eat. For folks out there that may be trying to manage blood glucose, oftentimes around 60 grams of carbohydrate a meal is a healthy amount. Now that, you know, is an average. That's not a prescription for everybody, but it at least helps put into perspective if you look at something, how does this fit into a healthy meal or a healthy amount of carbohydrate?
Well, Tammy, I would imagine right now you're a hero to many dieters out there that, you know, hear the blessing to have 60 grams of carbohydrates or minimum of that. And like you said, it all varies from patient to patient or person
right,
to person.
Right.
But most people in general are like anti-carb, period. Which this time of year,
you
people don't want to hear that.
Right. This is a carb-laden time of year.
Yes.
But, you know, when we think about what does our body need to be healthy, the Institute of Medicine recommendation is around 130 grams of carbohydrate a day. And our brain needs carbohydrate in order to function. You know, I don't know if you've ever had a day where you haven't gotten a lot of carbohydrate. And sometimes it becomes, your brain gets kind of cloudy. You can't think as clearly. And that's because we need carbohydrate to fuel our body. So we don't want to totally avoid it, but it's all about moderation.
See, for me, it's the other way around. I have kind of taught my body to survive on fat, on good fats and high protein. So, like,
you've kind of trained yourself.
I've broken my sugar addiction. I don't need bread. I don't eat pasta. I don't, you know, like, I don't crave that stuff. Not saying that it's bad that you do. You know, but I've, you know, there is ways to function without carbohydrates and sugar. I mean, your body will, it's a survival mechanism. So it's like, okay, this is what you're giving me. I'm going to adapt and I'm going to learn how to feed off of these great things you're putting in me.
Our bodies are resilient, aren't they?
Fascinating.
They learn how to function.
They really are fascinating. And I love the, you know, the discussion of it because there's so many different ways to approach it. Your book does a great job of helping people figure out what do they eat now when they're diagnosed or faced with a situation where you have to change the eating habits. And where can people find the book?
Yeah, so the book is What Do I Eat Now? And it's designed to be a step-by-step guide to eating right with type 2 diabetes. But a lot of people with prediabetes or individuals that just want to get healthy are interested in it. And it's available at shopdiabetes.org. That's the American Diabetes Association website. It's on Amazon.com and in bookstores nationwide. So What Do I Eat Now?
It's a great book, easy topic, easy book to read. We flipped through it, lots of great ideas. And then, Tammy, before I let you go, I got a text that came in, and I want to get this answer, too. It comes from the 815 area code. What does Tammy think about these green powder mixes and juicing and blending as it relates to this?
So with juicing and blending, if you blend the whole fruit and vegetable, you're going to get the fiber and more nutrients generally than juicing alone. So I'm a fan of, you know, blenderizing shakes and smoothies and that kind of thing. If people want to add protein powders to it, they can. But when it comes down to blood glucose, you still got to consider the carbohydrate of whatever is going into that juice.
The sugar, yeah.
Smoothie. Yeah, so that's the big consideration for those folks out there that may be trying to manage blood glucose and think about things from that perspective.
Good stuff, Tammy. Thanks for your time. We appreciate it. Have a great Sunday.
Thanks. You as well. Great talking to you.
You too. Take care.
Frank Fontana.
Welcome back to the Frank Fontana Show. We're in the home stretch here, folks. We've got about, 8 more minutes to talk here, and we're going to go give some stuff away with those 8 minutes. I bet you all like that. You've been texting all show long about your labor room stories, as young Ross Cochran here is about to, his wife is about to pop one out. So crashly speaking.
That was crashly speaking.
Sorry. But, he'll be waiting across the room with that catcher's mitt. Come on, baby.
Yep.
Get it out of here.
That's exactly how that's going
to
go.
I'm sure she loved the analogy, too. That's what I said to my wife, too. My baby, come on. Squeeze that thing out. Get it going. We had such a, I mean, speaking of labor room stories, you got to make light of it when we had our experience. My poor wife, Sherry, was in the labor for 4 days.
Ooh.
4 days, Ross.
Yeah, you can't really eat.
It was on. It was off. It was on again. Go home. Come back. Labor is the perfect word for it.
Yeah.
For everybody involved, but mostly the woman.
The perfect word that you're allowed to say on the radio.
Right.
Yeah.
But you all have been chiming in with your stories, and they're really fun. And Ross, because this is your world, we're going to allow you to pick our winners here. What stories did you like? And please read them, because I think some of them are funny.
Yeah. So we had somebody from the 713 said, my husband was hungover and had to stay up for the whole 22 hours. Serves him right.
I like that one.
I like that one because that's not going to be me. Another good one for me was my husband during child number one went out of the room to catch the Michigan State football game and wasn't there to catch the baby. Child number two went downstairs to grab a bite.
You're recording me on that one, right?
Yeah. By number three, I had threatened crazy glue on his feet and no prospect for number four. That was from the 224. This one, is real. The 847 had a non-progressive
labor. Which, by the way, if you're listening to these being read and you want your prize, Ross tried to call you,
yes. But
you didn't pick up the phone. So if you see a number you don't know calling you right now, call us back because we want to give you something for these.
Yeah, we want to give you some stuff. Yeah. So she had a non-progressive labor that went on for a day and a half before C-section. She couldn't eat the entire time. The funny part of the story is the husband left at one point and came back with McDonald's and ate it at her bedside.
Oh, that's just wrong.
Now, here's the thing. 20 years later, he's still hearing about it. That's what I want to avoid. I'm not expecting someone to go
so
perfect.
This whole experience for you is to avoid any future damage
to your well-being. I don't want when someone says the word baby for Lauren to be like, well, then let me tell you.
Well, let me tell you the story.
Right.
So,
that's the kind
well,
of thing
I know I'm not going to be the fault of you not being there because you're going to be off in the weeks prior to and after.
Yes. So I'm going to be off for the next couple Sundays. You're going to be off for a couple Sundays after that. And we will rejoin the Frank Fontana show with a child in 2016.
But we'll have great content. We're planning each show, so it'll be all filled with our usual fun guests. And
next week with your friend Anne.
Folks, Anne Nordhaus Bike is coming back. She is our celebrity astrologer who every time she hears, the phone lines are jammed up. We allow you guys to call in and get your – don't call now because she's not here now.
Right.
But next week she'll be here to read your sign and what's going on in the moons and the sun and the stars for you because, believe it or not, that is the first – real science the world ever had is astrology.
Right.
And she has mastered the science of astrology to be able to better tell you why the things in your life are happening the way they are.
Right.
And when they potentially can open up.
Right.
Which for you, Ross, I think you should talk to her now because I wonder if there's any, because your wife's saying she's like feeling like it's going to happen any second, right?
Yeah, she's feeling a little ahead of the game.
A little poppy.
Which fits her entire life. Like, she's the on-time one. I'm the late one. It would make sense to me to have the labor early and efficiently.
Now, is your dad on call? Like, is he waiting for that? Is he going to just mosey on over
to the hospital? No, yeah. No. This might be the one time in his life where he doesn't mosey.
Yeah.
But he's off all of next week. That was kind of in anticipation.
Now, what happens? Right. So, what happens if next week comes and goes and nothing happens? Then what?
And then the show happens. My guess is he will run out of the studio, like what happened when my older sister was born.
So he was on air.
He was on air.
The phone rings.
The phone rings. It was my mom.
Grandpa.
And he left. It was like his second or third day, and mm-hmm. he just went, "Look, my kid's being born. Bye," and left. Right. And they just scrambled and figured something out for the couple hours that he was on.
Yeah.
I don't think he was at that station for a particularly long time.
Because of that?
He would tell you it was a difference in managerial decision making.
Yeah, interesting. Hey, folks, how you doing out there? Good to see y'all. Weather looks like it's warming up out there.
Yes,
that's
which
a
is
nice
good
thing.
For,
and any update on the Bears yet? I know Carmen, is doing his thing upstairs. He couldn't join us, but we usually get our last minute Bears update from him.
As it currently stands, it is 20-13 Bears with 2 minutes left to go in the fourth.
Good. It would be good that they win.
Yeah. So it's
there's playoff talk going around. I mean, I'm starting.
Yeah,
to hear
they got to get some of their things in order, but they could. It could definitely happen. Stranger things have happened in the NFL.
Yeah. And in labor rooms.
And in labor rooms.
I'm glad that all of you have chimed in with these stories because they are really interesting. My dad, as I tell you, right, when I was born, he was sitting with my grandfather at home smoking a cigar.
Sure.
Drinking homemade wine.
Right.
And playing cards.
Right.
Do you think that would fly today?
No.
Like, if your dad didn't show up because he was, watching the Bears play or the Blackhawks, and he's hanging out with his buddies, him and DeCoste are like, sitting around, drinking a beer, and he gets, Ross is gonna have his kid now.
Yeah.
And he doesn't show up. He's like, I'm just gonna finish the game. I'll be there afterwards.
Right. I think for my dad in particular, it would be okay because I'm not sure if jokes are really what's going to fly in the labor room.
Right.
But in general,
is he a nervous guy when it comes? By the way, folks, we're talking about Steve Cochran, who's the morning host here at WGN for a million years. and so is he is he nervous? Will he start just telling jokes because he's nervous?
Yeah, he'll be a little chatty probably. More likely is that he will try to wait for the perfect time to crack a joke.
Right. Because good humor is all about timing.
Yes. He, the one thing I've learned from him is when you are 20 minutes late to something that you absolutely couldn't be late for, how to walk into a room, crack one joke, and have everyone who was mad at you for being late not be mad at you anymore.
Yeah. He's a master at that, huh?
He's a master at that. A lot of experience.
Got to talk to that guy. All right, folks. That about does it for us. Mark Carmen, Dan Hampton, OB, Kaz, they are all waiting to get the show on the road to talk to you about these phenomenal Bears that are just pulling some, Hail Marys left and right. Not literally, but to stay in this playoff race. They're still there, our Bears. That does it for me. You can visit me at frankfontana.net. You can visit me on Facebook, Twitter, all that fun stuff. We'll have all the content from today posted up after the show. The podcast is available up on my website as well as my Facebook and Twitter and all that stuff. And Ross is responsible for all that. So if it doesn't get up there, yell at Ross. He'd be happy to ignore your emails and texts.
Yeah.
All right.
This time of life, yeah.
All right. Do we have anything to read here? Or are we just going to
go
away?
No, I think you're good. We'll take a quick break and we'll get to the news.
Sounds good, folks.